Hey everyone, and welcome to tonight's episode of The Magic Box. I am Tristan Sean Gregson here with Kyle Eck. Seems like it's been a while since it's just been the two of us in here.
I know, we've had like a million guests all the time.
Yeah, that I'm sure that parade will pick back up a little bit in the future, but for now, it's just the two of us. We've finished the first month of this season's Cube League. It was a wacky one, because for those of you that aren't familiar with the Cube League itself, the way it's structured, the way we put it together was it'll run for 12 weeks, and you get max points, or regular match scoring points towards the league, 3 of 4 weeks of the month that you participate.
Right, so if you have to skip a week, it's not incredibly detrimental.
Right, you know, it's really hard for people if they're not there in minute one of any kind of league format to really get energized about it and want to participate in it.
Yeah.
But in the Cube League, it works out where you could show up 9 of 12 weeks, and you're very much in the running. You're getting what we'll call max points. It's not really the case, but max points per match win. The fourth week of a month, so if you're a player that plays every single week, you don't miss a beat. If you play a fourth week within a given four-week period or a month, you're not going to max out on points. For a match win is worth 1 point as opposed to 3 points.
Yeah.
A draw is still worth 1 point, and a loss is worth 0.
So it's very much like the go-crazy week.
It can be. And it's funny because in the inception of Cube League, I didn't look at it as an opportunity to kind of, like, go wild. But I think now that we've kind of done it, that's what it really looks like. And it's kind of a lot of fun to kind of, like, change pace for the players that were there all 3 weeks prior to come in the fourth week. And it kind of changes your thought process, it kind of changes your motivations.
Right, it changes, like, what you're willing to draft and what you're not. Like, the deck I drafted this week was really fun, but I don't know if I would have necessarily gone whole hog on it if it had been a full point week.
And it's funny, because since I'm not in the league, as I am the be-all, end-all card choice person, so it feels like I have an unfair advantage, I just drafted a good blue-white control deck, and I looked around the rest of the table and was like, oh, I'm just not having as much fun as everyone else, and that makes me sad. And
yeah.
I would have swapped decks with you in a heartbeat, even though I ended up 3-0-ing the draft.
And beating me in the process.
True.
My deck was way fun, though.
True. And
it was also shooting for the achievement stars, which is also a relevant point of the fourth week.
Right. So it's not just about kind of having a one-off and doing something fun and different, but you know, you also have the opportunity to try to kind of strive for the achievements that we put into the Cube League.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of fun, but also kind of filtering things differently and looking for particular ways to win or cards to do it with. Your particular deck, you could have had the Kai achievement this week with the Covetous Dragon Wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have had, you were one off from having the
all the swords.
The Fencing Ace one, which was having all four swords.
I had everything but War and Peace. And I had the Stoneforge Mystic.
Yes.
Like, I had a sweet little brew.
So, yeah, you know, again, when I thought about it, I was like, oh, you know, I don't want Cube to kind of devolve or kind of change into this wacky, like, who can draft the most five-color dragons. But it's kind of fun to see it in action, because it's not all the time. Like, it's not like this is what it would turn into.
You want people to take it seriously, but it, in and of itself, is not a serious format, so to speak. Like, you still want people, like, the goal of it is to have fun, and, like, being able to, you know, let your hair down, so to speak, and have, like, screw it, you know, I know it's not great, but I'm going to draft, like, this totally wild and crazy deck, or, like, I want to get that achievement on the list, like, I'm going to shoot for that, like, especially if you open something that, like, directs you in that way, like,
right.
You know, stuff where you wouldn't normally even try it, because you're like, oh, this probably won't work, but, like, screw it, it's crazy.
And again, having it not be, like, a permanent fare, like, this isn't something necessarily players are going to do every week once they're necessarily out of contention for the league. It's just for those players that show up all the time. It kind of gives them an extra angle. So that's really fun and something that I'll definitely try to cultivate more in the league side of Cube as the more we do it. So this week, before we delve into the main topic, which I guess there's no reason to hide it. If you're watching this live, you can see it in the text. And if you're listening to this after the fact, you might have seen the title. We're finally going to start to go through each of the section breakdowns of the main Cube. I mean, we talked about Skeleton Cube earlier in the week. But we'll really look at some of the choices we made, some of the cards that work. And I think kind of starting in reverse to the mainstream, or kind of bridging the topic where we talked about with Nathan last week, would be that of lands. You know, we talked about the Mirage Fetch lands. I think that's a great talking point. So we'll talk more about that as the show goes on. But let's open things up with our pack of the week. And Eck, my lovely co-host, will tell the kids listening to this after the fact what we're looking at today.
All right, so for today's pack, we have Academy Rector, Grim Lavamancer, Vivid Creek, Sarkhan the Mad, Damnation, Factor Fiction, Garrick Primal Hunter, Stoneforge Mystic, Phantasmal Image, Boros Garrison, Birds of Paradise, Mercenary Knight, Gisela Blade of Gold Knight? Is that her name?
Yes.
Vesuva, and Obsidat Ghost Council.
This is a spicy one.
This is a spicy pack of a lot of cards that are hard as hell to cast. Also.
So we've got triple green, double black, double white, double white, red, red, black.
Like, this is a... this pack is certainly, like, a tale of two power levels, I feel. Like, I feel like there are a number of cards that are very, very powerful in this pack, and then there are other cards that are simply okay, and the cards that are all very, very good are also very, very difficult to cast. So, like, it's really awkward because, like, a card like Obsidat is awesome, but I don't necessarily want to commit to that right away.
It's, that guy, just, you know, in a vacuum is so hard, because it's like, oh, you know, I'm very much a blue-white deck, and then, you know, we saw Obsidat, but we can't really take it. But it's like, here, we're not committed to anything yet.
Right.
Is this card powerful enough that we can take it, knowing that we're going to need double white and double black to cast it? It's a weird card, because we know it's really powerful. It is really good. It's proven itself.
Every time it's in play, it is just this street beating all the time. Like, you just can't kill it. It just, like, swings games so hard.
The life gain is so amazing. The drain on it is just so...
It makes it so difficult to erase. Like, even if you have blockers, like...
So the question to me, looking at this particular set of 15 cards, is, if I can't take Obsidat here, do I take would I take it if I took a Damnation first? If I got past this 14 cards, replace that Obsidat, take the Damnation.
I mean, I think it's reasonable to expect Obsidat to come back because, especially like white black being such an awkward color combination that not a lot of people are going to want to like jump right into, like. Like, that's a hard line to draw. And I think that, like, you could very easily, like, even if you wanted to play white-black and wanted to play that Obsidat, you could either take the Damnation or take the Stoneforge Mystic, and reasonable amount of success, Obsidat would come back.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. Stoneforge Mystic and Damnation are some of the top white and black cards, respectively, to take in the opener. Damnation because... That effect isn't replicated in black the way it's replicated in white. So having the elimination in the draft goes a really long way.
Yeah, there's no mutilate.
It's not one of those things that people will play around for much from the black mage as they will from the white mage.
Yeah.
And it's one of those key components to a black control deck that you want to have, but you rarely get to have. That said, starting a deck with Stoneforge Mystic is just where you want to be. Taking that card out of this pack, no one's going to take an aggressive white deck. There's just an Academy Rector and there's two gold cards with white in them that are kind of expensive and an Academy Rector, so no one is going to kind of fight you for those cards should you choose to go down that route. And obviously, there's plenty of equipment to make Stoneforge Mystic very powerful.
I mean, like, alternatively, like, Grim Lavamancer is the only really red card. You know, you could certainly just take that and be aggressive with it. You know, Factor Fiction is really, 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 really good. Like...
When I look at a pack like this, my eyes just kind of naturally gravitate towards the blue cards. And the blue cards here are awesome because they're both single blue. Phantasmal Image is really great for all the blue decks because it's so cheap that you can clone a big guy and still have counter magic up. You can copy a legend and kill it. A great way to get rid of Thrun or Gisela or, you know, any of these threats that you might have difficulty getting rid of. I could take Fact or Phantasmal Image, being super excited to wheel Vivid Creek or Vesuva just talking about blue. So it's hard to move away from those cards, but I think that the power level of Damnation is high enough for me. Stoneforge Mystic, I think it's a little bit more of a gamble. You know, we are playing 700 cards. In those 700 cards, there's like 11 equipment.
There's a fair amount of equipment, and it's all very good.
Yeah, like, well, yes. Any piece of equipment, maybe minus Bone Splitter, it's going to be huge with this card.
But, like, you know, Batterskull, the Swords, Jitte, Skull Clamp, like, those are some of the best cards in the entire cube, and having the ability to tutor for them very good.
Yeah, now we're just back to basic what makes Magic cards good. So, at the end of the day, are you saying Stoneforge Mystic?
I think I am. I mean, this this pack is weird. Like, Stoneforge isn't a card I would normally want. Not that I would want to take it first, but, like, it's not the kind of card I usually like to take first. But I certainly will out of this pack. Like, Garrett Primal Hunter is very good, but Triple Green is a hell of a commitment. You know, Giselle is a huge beating, so is Obsidat. But, again, I don't want to commit to that much colored mana right away.
Plus, if you take the Stoneforge Mystic and the Gisela table, you could just kind of put the Gisela in your pool and kind of see how things worked out.
Or the Obsidat tables.
Or the Obsidat tables. That's pretty safe. I feel good about that. Those things being said, I think I'm just going to take the Damnation out of this pack.
And hope for the Obsidat table?
Or the Sarkhan, or the... or the Vivid Creek, or the Vesuva, or the Phantasmal Image, maybe the Academy Rector.
Like, there's a lot of cards you can get back.
So yeah, I think that...
Black is one of the sweetest spots for Rector, because of Bargain.
Yeah, and Abyss, and Moat, and Debtor's Knell, and et cetera.
Like, there are plenty of sweet ones to get.
I'm not going to say Academy Rector is a black-white card, but it feels often much like it's a black-white card. So I'm happy taking Damnation. You're going to go with Stoneforge Mystic here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Stoneforge.
Okay.
I'd like to prefer to be a little... I mean, like, reactive decks are fine in cube, but I generally prefer to be proactive. And Stoneforge just strikes me as a more proactive card.
It can be. I brick with that card too often.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, even if you have one thing to get, it's sweet.
True. But then you draw it, and then you're like, okay, well, I'm going to try to, like, draw my Brainstorm and then get full value, and then you're just, like, sandbagging, just try to get value. And
no, I'm just, like, playing a Squire so I can put my sweet equipment on it.
You could do that, I guess. That way, search and reveal for anything, and then they don't see it coming when you just jam it into play off of her ability next turn.
Well, it's very obvious that you have it if you fail the search. Like, come on. But, like...
it's totally under my shell, that guile.
Like, Stoneforge is fine, and I think that... Yeah, like, I generally want to be proactive. Equipment's very good in cube. Being able to go get it and having a body to put it on is also relevant. It's the kind of the all-in-one package.
Well, Sam's right there with you. He says Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah. See? Sam agrees with me.
Yeah. I feel like we should... if we'd only planned this better, we could have just, like, turned the Skype on and shipped him in.
Right. That would be a... The only thing is I don't have speakers.
You don't have speakers on your computer?
No, I just have headphones.
That would be a little weird. This is why we didn't make this thing happen today.
Yeah.
We'll get some dime store speakers, and then we'll have Sam Pardy, Sminster.
Top 4 Magic top Online.
Yeah, we'll have him on.
So.
Eck is all headphones all the time. It's kind of weird.
I have housemates.
I know.
I don't want to be disrespectfully blaring my raver music at 3:30 in the morning.
That's weird, because that's when your roommates are awake.
I know. I should have said 8 a.m.? 11 a.m.?
Right before you go to bed.
Noon? All right.
Okay. So our pick-a-pack was good there. It's not hard to have both. No, it's not.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's transition into today's main subject. Let's talk about lands, baby.
Let's talk about lands.
If you'd like to bring up the lands section of R cube.
I will momentarily. So anyway, I think land section is interesting because you kind of have to balance it between having enough fixing so that everyone can play all their cards, but also have interesting lands for the decks that don't necessarily want or need all the fixing.
Yeah, it's funny, no matter how much we expand the, is there a way you can just, like, highlight that section and drop that in the viewer for people? Is that too much work to do on the fly?
Yeah.
All right. Next time, we'll make this thing happen. So, over with the lands section, it seems like, you know, we just went up to 90 lands, and I feel like I could add, like, 30 more, and it would still be interesting and exciting. I mean, well, mana...
Lands are sweet.
Mana is the way to make things go. Mana is,
And especially, like, lands that are spells are so much fun and good.
Yeah. Like,
I love a deck that, you know... I love having, like, red aggressive decks that have Barbarian Ring or Hellion Crucible or Gitu Encampment, like, you know.
There was even a time where Sheevan Gorge was in the cube, and that wasn't the worst thing ever.
It was not the worst thing ever.
I mean, it was close to, but it wasn't the worst thing ever.
Library always feels like one of the filthiest things that you could do ever.
That's different. Library doesn't count as a land. It counts as if you want to jump over the table and punch the guy who played it on turn one.
Yeah.
So the thing about the lands section is, if you're building a power cube, if you're building a trying to support all the colors all the time, not, you know, it's so archaic now to talk about what the original Wizards Invitational cube looked like, but that was the basis for a really long time of what people thought cube was, and myself included, uses a big reference point where monocolored decks were drafted primarily, and if you were to play...
Because the fixing was so bad.
If you were to play three colors...
Good luck.
Yeah, it was a different world. And we don't like that as Magic players, especially as we're having fun in our own format. We want to be able to cast all of our stuff. So, with that knowledge, you have all these cards that are just taken up right out of the gate in your land section. Dual lands, Rav dual lands, sac lands, and you're kind of crazy not to include, like, shards, tri-lands.
Or the bounces.
Bounce lands are a little bit more of a point of contest with people. Those are not auto-includes in everyone's list.
I feel like they're not auto-includes, but I feel like they should be just because, like... Bounce lands have this, especially in a cube like ours, where there's a lot of land destruction, bounce lands have like an interesting kind of gameplay tension where they're fixing, they let you keep landlight draws, like they're generally great value, but if you ever get them strip mined or wastelanded or stone rained or something, you just throw up in your mouth.
Very worthwhile gamble, and you're a little, you're putting the horse ahead of the cart here, because I wanted to finish off this thought by saying that, you know, when you get out of your land section... before you add what you consider to be a single choice, I feel like, you're already really at 40, closer to 50 cards. And that's before you have the conversation, bounce lands or no bounce lands.
I think also, like, it's important to build your land section first and figure out how strong your fixing is going to be before you really develop the colored sections, especially multicolor, because, like, how viable certain cards are depends heavily on the regularity in which you can cast them based on your fixing.
Right. If you aren't going to include as many fixers, you're just not going to have as many lands in your cube, or you want more of those colorless lands that act as spells or just do different things, you might not be able to support the crazy stuff like your Maelstrom Wanderers and your Sliver Queens. But I think those things are a little bit fewer and further between, and it kind of comes down to what you like and what your playgroup is going to be familiar with. If they're going to pick up a late Bancharm when they're playing green-white, and they're going to feel like they're going to have a reasonable chance of being able to play in their deck. Or it's like, oh, I'm 40, or I'm 32 picks into the draft, I see this card, and it's like, oh, it's not going to happen. Like, I have double white in my deck and double green in my deck. Or green's a bad color to use as an example, but you get the idea. So, you know, again, to me,
I think
you want to kind of max out on fixing.
Speaking of auto-includes, I think one thing that should also be an auto-include are the Worldwake Man lands.
That was the other side of it.
Like,
when you jumped in with Bounce lands, it was Shards Tri-lands and Worldwake Man lands. I think those are the two that kind of go hand-in-hand, including like, in your queue.
Like, Shards Tri-lands, I would argue, are not necessarily even as important. Like, I think the Worldwake Man lands are way better.
Well, I mean... like, I will say they're better, but we're really kind of splitting hairs here. Yes, actually, Sam, that was one of the things that kind of spawned this topic, was we were talking about the MotoCube changes when we had Grand Prix San Diego champion Nathan Holliday and Michael Boland. I was trying to think of a funny thing to put in front of his name. When we had them on, we were looking at the Mirage Fetch lands, and it kind of brought up a great conversation about how much better they are than they were a couple years ago, how the, you know, landfall effects have made them better, Life from the Loam makes them great. I mean, I'm always trying to find ways, backdoor ways to support Life from the Loam, and it's really made me kind of look at those cards again, and it would be another great opportunity to bring back Steplinks, play the Geopede, maybe even look at other landfall effects that we aren't currently playing in the cube.
Nyxalis or something crazy?
He's not that crazy. I mean, you know, like, Royal Elemental is, like, stone crazy.
That is... yeah, that's nuts. But, like, yeah, I really like the Mirage. I mean, my only thing about them is that they're pretty slow. Like, because they come into play tap. Like, they don't cost you a life, which is nice.
So...
but they just...
the like, worst thing for them is... So the aggressive decks are going to have a land that's always going to come into play tapped. And... because aggressive decks always ought to play all the fetch lands. As it is right now, if you're mono-red, you're going to play them. If you're, you know, red-white beatdown, red-green beatdown, you're going to play them. You're like, you're windmilling Woodfall, Wooded Foothills. But looking at Mountain Valley, it's a little awkward because it's like, this is a land that's always going to come into play tapped. And then on the reverse side of that, for the control decks, you know, my Bad River comes into play tapped, and now it's coming to play tapped, I have to wait for another opportunity to go search for Watery Grave, which I don't want to pay 2 life to have to come into play tapped.
Right, you have to, like...
Or untapped, rather.
It's just, like, chain tap lands, which is... can be very, like, glacially slow.
So, you know, maybe it's just a trial and error type situation. You know, eventually for us, Thawing Glaciers came out of the cube. It was just too slow. You know, as sweet as it is with Bounce Lands, as sweet as it is with things like Top, and, you know, as we mentioned in the chat, you know, Divining Top, Sylvan Library, Oracle of Moldiah, there's a lot of very positive effects you can have with these fetch lands that I'm a big fan of. I mean, I take Brainstorm pretty darn high in cube draft.
I mean, more shuffle effects is good, you know.
Yeah. Ultimately, from the conversation we had earlier, the good was outweighing the bad. Yeah. It was just those two scenarios that were really coming back to me.
I just think that, like, you have to... excuse me. I think the cube, as it stands, can only support, or really people only want, so many always come into play tapped lands. Like,
right.
Even if they're fixing.
Right.
It's like, we already have the Bounce Lands, the Vivid Lands, the Tri Lands, the World Wake Duels. Like, we have so many lands that, like, aggressive decks never want because they come into play tapped. Or, like, even a lot of control decks, like, you look at a hand and it's like, okay, I have a Vivid Land, I have a Bounce Land, and I have, like, you know, one other land. And it's like, okay, maybe I can cast a spell on turn 3. Maybe. And it just ends up, they're just like, especially if you draw, you know, 2, 3 end of the battlefield tap lands in a row, you just feel like you're just like slogging through quicksand, you know.
What it sounds like is you're trying to make a case to cut Vivids and replace them with Mirage Fetchlands.
I think that would be fine. I mean, Vivid Lands are very good, especially with Reflecting Pool, which is now in. I think that what I'm saying is, if the Mirage Lands are going to come in, I think that you have to cut a tapped land cycle, like one of them. Whether that's the Trilands, whether that's the Vivids, whether that's the Bounce Lands.
I mean, you should also point out that the World Lake lands also come to play tapped.
Right, but those are way too good. Like, of all the lands that come into play tapped, those are the best.
Hideaway lands come into play tapped.
Not as good.
Hideaway lands are not as good as what?
The World Wake Duels.
That's actually debatable.
The World Wake Duels are, in my opinion, the best come into play tapped lands in the cube. Like, that always come into play tapped.
You mean Magic. They would be the best come into play tapped lands in Magic.
Sure, that's okay. Fine.
Alright.
Like, sure, Sheldak Isle can be good, but, like, almost always, like, most of my decks I would rather have, you know, Celestial Colonnade or a Creeping Tar Pit, I feel.
I mean, what I'm hearing is you would draft those cards over Sheldak Isle or Renbrous Kites.
If I'm, like, yeah, if I... It, say, if I'm playing...
I'm looking for a yes or no, really.
Yes, fine. As long as I have the other color supported. Like, if I'm playing blue-green, I'm not going to take Creeping Tar Pit over Sheldak Isle. Like, as long as I am firmly in those two colors so that I can regularly activate
them. Let's say you're blue-black control, you open up your third pack, and you see a Sheldak Isle, and you see Creeping Tar Pit.
I'm taking Creeping Tar Pit every time. Like, Creeping Tar Pit, like, all of those lands are... Like, the only one that's mediocre is Lava Cloud Reaches, and that's just because red-black doesn't want lands that come into play tapped normally. And it's, like, the easiest...
It also is the color combination that... The aggressive color combination that usually has the fewest lands in play.
And it's also, like, the easiest to kill.
So you're, like, activating a 2-2.
Yeah.
That's not about... I mean...
But, I mean, like, it's relevant.
Who cares? You're only activating it if you know you're going to get in there.
Right.
It's not about, like, oh, like, oh, I don't know if I should activate my man land. He might have a way to kill it.
But, like, Creeping Tar Pit always gets in there. Colonnade, for the most part, gets in there. Like, Raging Ravine, Stirring Wildwood tend to be on the big enough side that they're not just going to die right away.
Well, we've got slightly off track. I will agree with you the World Wake Man lands are good. I will agree with you that they are very close to on par with Wimbrous Kites and Sheldak Isle, although I would say that free spells are slightly exceeding lands that become mens. But I do think we are at a critical mass here of lands that come into play tapped. And at the end of the day, the conversation really kind of boils down to, does the freedom of the Vivid Lands to your mana base outweigh the power of the Mirage Fetchlands? Or, the third thing, is there another cycle of coming to play tap lands that we could do without. Could we cut the allied bounce lands and put in the Mirage fetch lands?
I would almost cut the Alara block tri-lands and try the Mirage in those spots.
Hmm.
Like, very rarely am I getting all three sides of those lands, and I'm basically playing them as, like, the invasion tap lands, like, blue and white, or, you know, green and white. Like, the fact that they work in multiple, in a lot of different decks is good, but at the same time, any deck that would take a tri-land
but
will also take a Rav duel.
But you're not necessarily going to see them. The point about the Shards tri-lands isn't every time I draft them, they're going to be three colors. It's when I see them, there are more opportunities for two of those three colors to be in my decks. I could be playing red-white and see Jungle Shrine, but if I saw Grasslands, I might not have a red land to get with it. And to me, it's just, okay, it's a slow plains right now. In the middle of a late to a draft.
The Alara Black lands to me feel most like splash enablers. Like, you're playing blue-black, but you picked up a Lightning Bolt, or you picked up a card that, you know, has like a little bit of red somewhere on it, and like, alright, now the Grixis tri-land is good, or like better. Or, you know, like Seaside Citadel, like, you're already playing green-white, but now you have like a Factor Fiction or something that you can splash. Like, the only upside I really like about the tri-lands is that they work as good two-mana lands in a lot of different decks, so they're going to get played a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to get drafted, and they're always going to get played. And, like, by cutting a color off of all of them effectively, you're limiting the number of decks that will play them. But I think that, like, that benefit is outweighed by the Mirage lands being able to get duels, you know, shuffling, putting a land in your graveyard, which is thinning your deck. Like, I mean, the Vivid lands are...
You can't rely on those things. Like, with a tri-land, you know, because they're tri-lands,
mm-hmm.
it's far more likely that two of those three colors are going to fit into a deck for you that's going to be powerful.
Sure.
With the Mirage fetch lands, you have to have more things going your way, or there are going to be circumstances where you're going to take that card and you're not going to get the one dual land that's going to apply to, you know, half of the side of the fetch land that you ended up with in your deck.
I mean, I think part of that is also, it's more of a philosophical point about, like, how you construct your cube and what you expect out of your players. Like, tri-lands are a great way to kind of bail people out, so to speak. Like, tri-lands tend to fix most poorly drafted decks better than any other land, because they tap for three colors, maybe Vivids. But Mirage lands reward more cohesive decks as they stand, and drafting around them better. Like, you know, you can rescue, like, kind of poorly mismatched, badly drafted decks with tri-lands that you could not necessarily do with other duels. Simply because they tap for three colors, and you have to have all three colors because your deck is kind of, you know, gone very sideways. And I think that the Mirage lands reward having a better, like, drafting better, so to speak. And it's like, do you want to give players that out, or do you want to reward players for drafting better?
I think there are plenty of ways to reward players for drafting well already. I think that you need to kind of bring the level up a little bit. I like what the tri-lands do. I don't want to lose them to a series of lands that are a little more situational. What I'm kind of feeling from all of this is I'm interested to cut those allied bounce lands and put in Mirage fetch lands. I mean, when was the last time you ever saw Gruul Turf and were like, yeah, Gruul Turf?
I mean, but at the same time, how often do you see Azorius Chancery and go, yeah, Azorius Chancery?
Yeah, and I would probably be close to as excited to see Flood
Plain. Like, you should almost just cut, like, the bounce lands that have, like, red in them.
Not green in them? Like, a red in them?
Like, because that's
Boris Garrison's very good.
It's okay. Like, but you never want it in, like, the aggressive red-white deck.
You can want it in the aggressive red-white deck.
Eh.
Especially if, you know, if we're bringing in more fetch lands, bringing a bounce land could, again, enable Steplink's Plated Geopede.
Right, but we would also have to add those cards.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, you know, that adding these five new fetch lands is another argument to bring back more landfall effects in the queue.
Yeah. I don't know, I was just never really impressed with landfall in general in queue. Like, things have to go very well. Like, I'm not a big Steplinks or Play to GP fan in Cube.
Well, here we are increasing it.
Right. If you added a second set of fetch lands, those cards would get slightly better.
Agreed.
You would still be cutting cards, in my opinion, that are better than them. Like, you're warping the design of the Cube to some degree around mediocre cards.
A lot of people would say that Steplinks and Play to GP aren't mediocre cards. I think they're very good aggressive cards, and we ended up cutting them from the queue because they just aren't consistent enough, in my opinion. And adding more consistency to those cards helps.
They're god-awful top decks, also.
Whatever. That's a shitty argument.
Well, but it's still relevant. Like having cards that are only good if you draw them on turn one or turn two is fine to some degree, but like they're just going to they're going to fail players a lot.
Sam wholeheartedly disagrees with you, and he plays a lot of Zoo.
We had Steplinks and played a Geopedon for a long time, and I was...
More played a Geopedon. Steplinks made a much earlier exit.
Yeah.
He was not so excited.
Like, even Geopedon, like, I was... Like, it was a guy, and it was okay. It never blew me out. It never...
It's hard for it to blow you out. You see it coming.
But I'm saying, like, it never, like... I was never like, man, that was a really good play to GFP.
Because it doesn't need to be really good. It just needs to be good, which is what it is.
But the cards that keep... The
fact that it has First Strike really goes a long way because it's in red, because you can just casually attack for one, and then you have the extra damage from burn spells.
Sure.
We're really splitting hairs here at this point. I like the idea... Ultimately, I like the idea of adding Mirage Fetch lands finally to Cube. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we just recently expanded it to 90 lands, and the 10 lands that we did add were much more along the lines of specialty lands. Brought in a lot of stuff that wasn't there prior. So, it's more of a question of what to cut on the land side. It's got to be tap lands. We've established that. If we do the Vivids, we have to cut another one from another part because we don't have the green Vivid. But...
There's a lot of colorless lands, though, that I think we could reasonably...
But none of those lands come into play tapped.
Oh, you want to just cut a fifth land that comes into play tapped?
Ideally. Like, if you were to cut the Vivids. So, again, the conversation comes back to tri-lands, Vivid lands, bounce lands, other.
But, I would say, say we cut the Vivids for the Mirage Fetches. We need a fifth. Like, I would nominate Corehaven.
Okay.
For the chopping block. Like, that's not a land that comes into play tapped.
Sure. But, sure. We can fill that in for now. Four Vivid lands and a Corehaven versus Shards Trilands versus Allied Bounce lands. I think Allied Bounce lands is the weakest of those options.
Yeah.
Included in the cuts of Allied Bounce lands are Rakdos Carnarium and Gruul Turf, two of the color combinations that want those lands the least.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the bounce lands that want the bounce lands the most, I will give you that they're Chancery most of the blue ones.
Chancery and Aqueduct, I think, are the
ones. I would think Boros Garrison is very high up there.
I mean, Boros Garrison is fine, but I don't know.
Like, in all of our Armageddon, Wildfire decks, Boros Garrison is, the one land that you want to have survive, or you want to be able to play that bounce land, return a land to your hand. We're talking about decks that are going to have land tax in them. I mean, bounce lands with Mox Diamond are also very good as well. Mox Diamond goes better into decks with Armageddon and Wildfire. Yeah. To me, Boros Garrison is top three on the bounce lands, maybe number one.
Right, but Boros Garrison's also not on the chopping block at all.
Yeah, I know.
So we're just talking about Boros Garrison then?
No, yes, I will bemoan the loss of Azorius Chancery. Of the five allied bounce lands that we would be cutting, Chancery is the number one to see later.
Aqueduct is a close two.
I don't think it's that close.
I mean, those are definitely the two. Like, one of the things I like about, and George actually was doing this today, because George was playing, Reanimator.
Okay.
Kind of. So, on the draw, he was turn two, bounce land, discard Fatty, untap.
Reanimate.
Yeah. Like, So that's like a side bonus of the bounce lanes, especially the black ones. So like that's kind of what I'm thinking more of. Like on top of like blue-black control, like Aqueduct kind of has a very mild narrow enable for reanimators.
And we still at least have the option to kind of just break the norm. I mean, we can cut...
Just cut the bad ones and leave the good ones or something?
Yeah, it does start to kind of skew where the fixing is at and where it's not at, and I don't like that. I mean, yeah. The more we talk about lands, it should be important to point out, because so World Wake has 5 allied tap lands, mm-hmm. but we're yet to see 5 main lands of enemy colors. So because of that, the Eventide filter lands are in the cube.
And they're really good.
Yeah.
I really like those. I think especially for the way the enemy color decks tend to come out, like, having that filter is really, really useful.
Agreed.
Like, the green-blue one is super good. The black one was obviously, like, if you're playing black-white, it's, like, the most important card. Like, I really like the filters. And even, I think, even if they printed a cycle of main lanes that were both colors, I would still kind of want access to the filters.
Which bodes the question, would you like the Shadowmoor filters? Cryptic Command into White Sun Zenith?
I mean, they'd be okay. I feel like the way the enemy color decks tend to... Like, remember what we were talking about, you know, when we were talking about the guild pairings? I feel like the enemy color decks tend to have rougher mana. You know, for whatever reason, you know, they have fewer access to... They don't have the World Wake Banlands, whatever, like... The filters just tend to always make those decks way, way better. And it's not even necessarily like...
I don't think it's universal, though.
But it's like, I wouldn't even... Like, oh, I really wish I had Graven Cairns in this black-red deck or something. Like, that...
I think you would.
I mean, like, it's never going to be bad. It's just not going to be as important.
Hopefully. I don't know. Black-red, you want to be able to play your Slith Firewalkers and your Hypnotic Spectres.
Black anything.
Graven Cairns would go a long way there.
Sure.
Meanwhile, Twilight Mire
is fine.
No, it is fine. It just doesn't have the same impact. Maybe one day down the line, you know, the Shadowmoor filters have been in the cube from time to time, and a lot of the kind of decisions made around lands come a lot to do with balancing. You know, from the Skeleton Cube episode we talked about last week, the lands are 100% balanced. If you're going to have a land that produces a white or does something else, that's a white spot. And there's, you know, a quality across all the other colors for all of these things. You know, in the 700 card powered cube, it's not 100% like that. You know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, which of the Innistrad Dark Ascension lands we like and which ones right. We don't.
Like, some of those are very good and other ones are pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the problem is, like, those are, because it's such a small, like, it's not like you have, like, a wealth of double colored activation, like, neat effect lands to choose from.
If they weren't in Innistrad. It's like, oh, let's not use the Innistrad one, let's use the Invasion one.
Right. Like, you don't have, like, a lot of options. Right. Like, so if you want to play all of them, you have to play, like, a bunch of crappy ones.
Those aren't going to be symmetrical.
Right. Which is why we have, you know, we have Wolf Run, Drown Yard, Slayer's Stronghold.
Township.
And Township. Right. But, like, no Moorland Haunt, no...
Most of the blue-white decks have a lot of creatures, so no Moorland Haunt. Grim Backwoods is way too expensive. No Grim Backwoods.
Same with the white-black.
Vault of the Archangel is very expensive to activate.
I mean, it's good.
Now, Vault of the Archangel is probably the fringe one where it's like, if I was to add one of those cards in a heartbeat, that would be the one to add.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Not Desolate Lighthouse?
No, I'd add Vault.
Wow. I'd add Lighthouse.
I mean, we talk so much about how red-blue really needs its mana fixed.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Oh, in a way, you could go find lands with Loot House.
I mean, like... I don't know, Lighthouse just seems like a sweet thing. Like,
the number of times I activated Lighthouse on the MTGO cube were not as many as I thought I would be. And really? That card would have been up in my deck a lot.
See, I would feel like, I mean, I don't have as much experience with it, because I don't think I ever drafted Blood Blue when it was in the Moto cube. But, like, you know, you're playing a deck with, like, a lot of instant speed spells, you know, counter spells or removal, whatever, bolts. And so, like, if they don't play anything, like, now you have something to do at the end of your turn. Or end of their turn, rather. Like, you can go digging for something.
Yeah.
Dig for a win condition.
I mean, that's kind of what Drown Yard's for.
Right.
Find
guess.
The flashback spells. Get over
Find it. Increasing confusion.
Yeah. Winner.
Yeah. That card is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I like that card a lot.
It's almost...
I had to restart a game with Karn in tonight's draft because I had exiled my Increasing Confusion...
With Force of Will.
To Force of Will, and I was having a hard time finding a way to win the game.
Yeah.
That's the kind of Magic I played this evening. It was not spectacular. I mean, I won, but...
Yeah.
When I reset the game with Karn, I got a Liliana of the Veil, and my own island, and Azorius Chancery.
Combo.
Yeah, it's a good thing I put both of those cards under there. It would have been bad times.
You would have just had a Liliana? Oh, no. Well, darn.
I don't know. It's not, you have to understand, I wasn't going to win the game with that card.
Fine.
My opponent was like red-black.
Yeah.
A bunch of burn spells. Okay.
Anyway.
So I think... So we've talked about... A lot of the auto includes. We've talked about the new sets of fetch lands. It's like, there's not a cycle of fixing lands that I really, like, have it out for or really don't like. I mean, the community is really good at knowing what's good and what's bad.
Yeah.
Invasion lands, we'll never see the light of the day ever again. They're not good. You know, M10...
They're just outclassed.
Yeah, the friendly lands, I don't have anything against them. They're just not in the first, like, six cycles of lands that I would play.
They're certainly fine, and I think that if budget is a constraint for when you're designing a cube, I think the friendly lands are a fine place to go.
And if we were to go to, you know, that also being said, if we were to go to 900 cards, I think if we were going to add a 10-card cycle of lands to the cube that we're color-fixing, that'd be the next one up.
Probably.
I mean, I'd take that over Scars lands.
What are the Scars? Oh, those, yeah, yeah. Probably. I mean, there's so many options. Like, that's the thing about lands. Like, there are so many different ways you can go about it.
Well, we're here to rank them, Mac. We have to... We've already made a lot of creative decisions that have gone into the queue that we have here. But we have to defend the ones we do and explain the ones we didn't. And M10 lands are a great one. I don't think... It's funny, though, because I don't think I ever had them in my cube at any point.
No, by the time that they were really a thing, we already had the old-school duels. And
I mean, before they were out, we had all that stuff.
That's certainly actually an interesting argument. Replace the colors that don't want bounce lands with Scars lands.
That is that fits a lot.
So like replace like Gruul Turf with Copperline Gorge
and Rakdos Carnarium with Blackleaf Cliffs.
Yeah, that's actually not bad.
Yeah,
like it's still mildly symmetrical, but you. More enforced with the colors you're trying to do.
This after it feels like we've come to a pretty good decision to put in the Mirage
right,
fetch lands.
That's the problem, is there's so many options, especially with lands, that like there's always another sweet option somewhere down the road, you know?
And, you know, it does come a little bit back to players walking up to your cube for the first time and never having played with it. One thing that's very frustrating is when people are very picky, like, oh, I only run... the bounce lands that touch blue. Or I only run the sack lands that touch red. And it's like, well, does everyone that walks up to your cube know that? Because I'm going to open a pack and I'm going to see Azorius Chancery, and then I'm going to be drafting, like, Garrick Pernicious Deed Deathcloud and be like, oh man, if that Golgari Rot Farm is anywhere to be out there, that's going to be in my deck. Lo and behold, it's not available.
I think the more you break symmetries and the more that you make those kind of weird concessions... the more you have to make sure the list is distributed to all of your players ahead of time, which could be just kind of too much of a headache. Like, especially...
It's
like,
awkward.
Like, look at our situation. Like, we have the Cube League, but we have a lot of, like, walk-up players who just, like, I've never cubed before. I've never seen this. I want to do it, you know.
Yeah, we have three people tonight that have
never cubed before.
Yeah.
And they hadn't seen the list ahead of time, but they were able to build cohesive, decent decks, like, because they weren't expecting to get things that aren't in, or making judgments on cards that were there or not there, you know. Like, the more you kind of screw with the cycles, especially when it comes to mana fixing, you lead players kind of into traps, so to speak.
Yeah. So, that's what's hard to break cycles. Like, if I was going to break the bounce land cycle and cut the allied ones and put in the Scars fast lands, I would want to do it across the board. Which is a fine idea. Again, I think the more than half of them would be interested in that.
I mean, I think that, like, if you were to cut all the bounce lands for 10 new lands, right? Like, I don't think you could have both the Scars lands and the Mirage duels, because then you're kind of boning the enemy colors.
Would you want to go five Scars Fastlands, the Innistrad enemy color friendlies?
That wouldn't be the worst. Are there... Well, I'd have to go back and look at, see what other enemy color lands are in history, other than, like, pain lands.
Do you remember what the 3-0 deck from the other pod was tonight?
I don't know who 3-0'd the other pod. Do you remember who it was? I could tell you.
It wasn't Vin. It wasn't Stefan. Wasn't Sterling? Yeah, we don't remember, we don't remember. I mean, I was one of them. I just had, like, a blue-white control deck. It was...
Yeah.
I mean, I had Hallowed Fountain, Zorius Chancery, Celestial Colonnade, Vesuva in my deck, and those were all very good.
Yeah.
Evolving Wilds, I also had Brainstorm.
Yeah.
Oh, and a Scalding Tarn.
I don't remember what I don't remember what the other pod had.
Is it this guy? Yeah, we could bring some individual cards up while we're having this conversation.
Sure. What do you want? Random card?
Yeah.
All right. Yes. Gang of Elk.
Just hang out with this Gang of Elk. It's no big deal. Having some form of symmetry helps a lot. And it's funny because Cube is so much about breaking symmetries. It's so much about adding partial cycles and breaking cycles and kind of just having players deal with it that it's a little weird to see that in the new border.
Yeah, it's weird looking.
It's
the only one.
No, it's not the only one.
Is there one other one?
There's Grasslands is in
for
sure.
Oh, yeah.
So I like it in some regards and I don't. I think with the lands where people kind of have expectations with lands. Like they don't have expectations with commands. It's like, no. Oh, I saw a Cryptic Command in your cube. Well, that means that I know Incendiary Command is coming around.
Right.
But I think when people see Azorius Chancery, they're like, "Oh, I know the other bounce lands are in this cube. I know your cube runs bounce lands."
Mount Lands of Water, poor Incendiary Command. Like, at least Austere Command, like, was in queue for a little while. And, like, he's good enough to potentially come back.
Yeah.
Incendiary Command, awful, all the time. Never made the cut.
It even destroys a land.
I know. I'm amazed.
For 5 mana, it should really destroy more than one land. I think that's probably my problem.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah, let's go back to our list real fast. Let's see what we've touched on, what we haven't.
Sure.
Maybe that long. We talked about what I feel like is the necessity in fetching and duels. Bounces are kind of at people's discretion. Ak kind of already mentioned this, where a lot of cubes don't like them for whatever reason or another. I think with the land destruction we have in there, that it's a calculated risk that you run. And the control decks and the five-color decks to try to stretch it out try to get there.
I think that like, one of the interesting things about the bounce lands is that, you know, especially, like, even if you're, like, the aggressively multicolored deck, like, how many is too many? And I think that that's the only land where that's really the case. Like, especially if you're, like, say, five-color, like, the Chromatic Lantern or Coalition Relic deck, which is absolutely a thing. Like, you want, like, even, like, the Tri-lands, you'll take all of them, just because you need to cast all your spells, but, like, the bounce lands... Like, how many is too many? Because, like, once you get to, like, three or four of them, like, the risk becomes so great that you just get constantly blown out by land destruction.
I think if I was, a four bounce land, 18 land deck, that's a lot of mana sources.
A lot of
without mana. Talking about, like, any other, like, brown acceleration.
Right. So it's like, you know, I mean, obviously you count them as, like, slightly more than one land, but, like.
No, I count them.
You just count them as
a land. I count them as a land.
I count them as slightly more.
That seems risky.
I count two bounce lands as, like, three actual lands.
That seems risky. Because you still need a land to play. I don't know. Well, that's not the worst. That's one of the reasons I really like the bounce lands. And, you know, we keep it fair. Because we have all that land destruction. It's half a liability and half a way to kind of, like, squeeze out another color. And I like that people can draft five color in my cube. And
it's one of the funnest decks.
Yeah, you know, and we're looking for maximum fun. So I think, is that going to cover us for mana fixing, kind of views on mana fixing?
Yeah. I'd like to talk about all of our special lands, though.
Yes, let's talk about all of our special lands.
Because some of them are very sweet. Some of them are not very sweet.
I don't know where I want to start. I would kind of want to start with the ones that we don't include on purpose, or ones that are fringe include worthy. I really wish we had, like, the extras binders lying around.
Lying around.
So I could just kind of, like, flip through and be like, oh... there's this card, and here's why we don't run it. You know, we've talked in the past, I feel like this has come up on multiple shows before, about Solarian Academy, and just kind of where it falls in cubes. It's one of those all-or-nothing scenarios, and I just don't like it.
I mean, yeah, Solarian Academy just never leads to interesting two-sided games of Magic. And there are already plenty of cards in cube that don't lead to interesting two-sided games of Magic. You don't need any more. Like,
you either have all the artifacts and this card just goes off,
or you have none of them.
You don't have them and it doesn't do anything.
And you just ship it to eventually where the guy who had all the artifacts.
Or no one plays it. It's just, it's not a dynamic card. It doesn't do things. It just might do a thing. But it's very powerful, and that's what makes it deceptive, because people that own power cubes will put it in their cube with the assumption that, oh, this card is really good. It must be really good to play in cube.
I mean, especially, I think, you know, we have a lot of, like, nostalgia includes in the cube.
Yes.
There are a lot of cards that are, like, you know, they're not the best, but they're good throwbacks, you know, and it's kind of the memory game. And Talarian, for a lot of players, I think, is like that, too. You know, Tinker and, you know, crazy Talarian Academy decks of days long past, you know, people remember how crazy Talarian was for a long time, and, you know,
it's one of those
you
things
try and
where
move
like,
it to a modern context of cube, and it doesn't fire on all cylinders like it did.
And I'm one of those guys that really likes to support Magic history in cube, and I wish there was a way to have Academy be balanced for a cube environment. I know saying Talarian Academy and balance in the same sentence doesn't really doesn't sound right.
And it's like, you know, if you're supporting Talarian Academy, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, do you put Metalworker in? Do you put Workshops in?
I guess we could talk about Workshop while we're here. If you bring up Mishra's Workshop,
yeah,
most people out there are going to be familiar with this one. It's in the same vein as Talarian Academy, where it's like, I know this card's really powerful. I know it's super good. It's got to be good in cube because it's so good, right?
Wrong.
Yeah, again, it's, you know, maybe you have a blowout. Maybe you have that turn one Floatstone Golem or something.
It's just more often than not bad.
Agreed. And, you know, it's so awkward when it's like you go cast Sword of War and Peace on turn one with this card. Now what?
Followed up with Porcelain Legionnaire.
Are you almost there? How do you equip?
You play a second land on turn two.
Yeah, that gives you one mana.
Oh, right, because you can't use the float for artifact ability. You can only cast with it.
Yeah.
Okay, Ancient Tomb. Turn two.
Turn two, Ancient Tomb?
Yeah.
So you've just made,
this
like,
is a real deck that we're
making right
now. I
was going to say, you've just named the weirdest mono-brown cube vintage deck ever.
Right. So, I mean, like, cards like this, like,
I think those are the most obvious category of things where, you know they're really powerful, you know they're really good, but they just don't translate.
In other words, Gaea's Cradle.
Gaea's Cradle's a different...
It
suffers similarly to Talarian Academy in that it has two great spectrums. It has, there aren't any guys in play, this card doesn't do anything. Or, I already have an extreme board presence, now I'm just going to go over the top of this card. This card has more of a middle ground, where I think Talarian Academy does not. It makes me think mostly of things like Deranged Hermit.
I think Cradle, like, so, Talarian Academy gets worse as, like, there are either fewer high-powered artifacts or they get diluted more. And I think that Cradle gets better as creatures get better, because there's more incentive to run just, like, mono guys, because all your guys do cool stuff. So, like, Cradle, as they keep pumping the power level on creatures across the board, like, Cradle just gets, like, incrementally better every time they print better and better guys.
You don't think that's at all related to the power level of token-generating effects?
I mean, like, that's obviously, like, the way to, like, break it.
Or the classic swarm strategy.
Right. But I think, like, okay. So, like, right now, like, even, like, a good aggressive deck with a lot of guys in it, I mean, you top out at, you know, most of my aggressive decks only have, like, I'd say 13, 14 guys. Like, because,
could
like, spells
you, could
are
you
so
say,
good.
On top of that, you have one or two spells that make creatures?
Sure, maybe.
Maybe you have a Mimic Fat. Maybe you have a Spectral Procession.
But at the same time, like, as time goes on and creatures get better and creatures do more things, especially with Enter the Battlefield triggers, the incentive to run more and more guys over spells becomes stronger, and that makes Gaea's Cradle better. Like, if you're playing, like, if you're playing, like, if you're going, like, full Onslaught Block style and playing 20 dudes, Like, Cradle's very good, especially if you have cheap guys to, like, really support it.
And you can draft decks like that in Cube.
Right, but there's less incentive to do it now, because there are still... Like, it's hard to get away with mono guys and have it be on the same power level as, like, a more spell-intensive deck. Like, for the most part... Like,
I don't think that's universal truth. I don't think that's 100% true. I mean, what Sam's saying is legitimate. Sam's saying he's just looking to tap it for 2 mana and have it be another form of Ancient Tomb, and I think that's very reasonable. I look at this card as Raphelos's retarded cousin, and it's just fine. I mean,
it's kind of like Sarah Avenger Land Edition.
Okay. A little bit more of a stretch, but... I could see Cradle coming back. I mean, I played it in Cube for a while, and I felt like it had that feeling. It had that feeling of... Well, I don't need to tap this for 6 or 7 mana because I can just attack and the game is over. Or, I mean, it's a green, and worse, it's not a green.
Like, I think it ends up... It'll, like... They're having a better way to cast, like, your Terastodons and your Woodfall Premises in your, like, mostly heavy green elves deck is sweet.
Yeah, and I
it just jumps you so fast.
Right, and I think that's really the strongest argument for Cradle.
Like, I would not.
It's not even like that much better with Township. You still have to find white mana and then tap a Township. But you know, having that extra kind of boost to cast Woodfall Primus, to cast Terastodon, to cast Avenger of Zendikar, and then it goes way off the deep end.
Right.
Or cast, you do those things, then you can just hard cast the Eldrazi that you couldn't find your tooth and nail for, or got countered.
Sure. Over. Like, I think of the lands that are like this. I think that Cradle is the one that I could see coming back soonest.
Oh, yeah, it's not a question. Talarian Academy and Sarah Sanctum are coming back. However, I think what is it helps you win games you're already ahead in. Yeah, that was my point from kind of the beginning. It's funny, in this show we've already mentioned Sheevan Gorge. The only one we haven't talked about is one that I actually think is legitimately getting better, the more that black is centering around the graveyard, and it's got to be the one that I hope gets better, and really want to play more with, and that's Phyrexian Tower. Again, this isn't really a balanced cycle at all, but this is a card I would be looking to add this card to my cube in the near future, trying to, again, we've added the Oath of Ghouls, we added the Oversold Cemetery, we're trying to make black do more cool stuff.
There's no doubting that this card is powerful and works well into what we're trying to make black do. I want a little bit more of the graveyard/creature recursion, like, being able to get value out of that. Like, and I'm not saying, like, I know the exact cards that would make me want this, but I'm saying, like, theoretically cards like if Ikarid was in, or if there was, like, Nether Spirit, or, like, those, like, the more mediocre ones, or even, like, Nether Shadow. A little bit more.
I do miss False Prophet. It's been a long time since I've cubed with False Prophet.
I mean, it is good with Rector. It's a Zac Outlet for Rector.
Yeah. Like,
that is true.
Black keeps telling us, the ability to sacrifice creatures is so powerful.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't have that annoying-ass drawback of having times where you don't tap for mana.
Right.
Like, at least with Phyrexian Tower, you play it, and it produces mana.
Like, the worst... It doesn't even come to play tapped.
Right.
Like, you can get a colorless with it. It's not the worst.
That is a bit of an aggressive... That's not... talk about Lake of the Dead. Let's talk about Lake of the Dead.
I don't like it.
This card has sat in the binder of not being played for so long! I feel like it's been there just forever, waiting for the day where making a lot of black mana in one quick shot, sacrificing your lands while you do it, does something awesome.
I mean, I think that Lake of the Dead... The power of Lake of the Dead is directly tied to how good Mono Black is.
I was thinking about how good Storm Combo is.
Well, okay, sure, if you have, like, some busted thing to do where you really need to accelerate quickly. But I think that really we're, like...
I like the chat line. It was featured quite nicely at the Mox, and then directly underneath Mox competitor, it's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can, like, I guess, live the dream and play a...
I played it in the Power Cube. I'm so disappointed I didn't record this draft, where I actually was handed it to me as my last pick, obviously, was drafting this weird Storm deck, as Power Cube allowed you to do. had a scenario where I was like, oh, I could put Leg in my deck and it would be all right. Had that scenario come to fruition, used it, and won a game. Like, I'm sure I tweeted about it and was, like, overly ecstatic.
Your medal is in the mail.
Yeah, my half percentage point of likelihood of this thing ever happening happened. Like, and every day of my life after that, it just hasn't happened.
It just never... Especially in Arceus with all the LD. Like, could you imagine how big of a blowout it is if you sacrifice your own land to play Lake of the Dead and they blow it up? Like, oh my god.
It's not even like... the fact if you.
That's even worse than getting a bounce land blown up.
If you could sack Lake of the Dead to make four...
Right, if it counted as a swamp or something?
Yeah, that would go a long way into making this card better.
So you have Urborg in play.
So now I'm playing a deck with Urborg and Lake of the Dead?
Like I was saying, Mono Black. The quality of Mono Black directly relates to how good Lake of the Dead is.
You know, I'm not going to say never, because tapping a land that makes four mana is good.
Certainly.
But I can't imagine a world in which we're playing Lake of the Dead any day soon.
The cost is so high, especially in our cube with all the wastelands and stuff, like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a little worse in our cube than in general. Outpost was in...
Outpost has been in and out a
conversely,
lot.
Kel'Jordan Outpost has been in and out. Outpost is one of those cards that only has an upside.
Bad Orcish Lumberjack? That's a good way to describe Lake of the Dead.
Yeah, and Orcish Lumberjack is rarely good.
Yeah. It's in the Moto Cube.
Yeah, from time to time, so is Lake of the Dead.
So are lots of cards.
Yeah.
So is not Shellback Isle.
We bitched about that already.
Yeah.
Kel'Jordan Outpost, unlike Lake of the Dead, is just upside. You just put guys into play. Creatures get better. Tokens get better. I like Outpost.
It's a little too slow.
I think ultimately we switched out for Corehaven.
We might have. To be perfectly honest, I'm not thrilled with either of those. Like, Corehaven feels like kind of a bust to me. Like, Outpost is fine. It's just very slow. And it's a recurring source of dudes, but at the rate at which you can get them and the cost that you pay, it probably isn't enough.
I think one of the key differences between Corehaven and Kel'Jordan Outpost is you can actually win the game with Kel'Jordan Outpost, and you can never actually win the game with Corehaven.
That's certainly true. Like, there are going to be games where, like, you've somehow developed some crazy, grindy board state lockout situation where Outpost making guys every turn is, like, your route to victory.
It's still so slow.
It's really slow. And that's kind of my problem with it. Like, a lot of times when Outpost was in, it functioned very similar. I think the reason we made it Corehaven is because it was very similar function. Because it was just block. Like, pay two and tap it, block a guy. Like, that was, like, how it worked almost all the time.
It does have the option to win the game. You can make creatures with it. You know, we have Crusades, we have Opposition, even. We have things that make it sure. Outpost better.
Here with equipment.
At the end of the day, it just felt like, you know, not losing a Plains to play Corehaven. The fact that Corehaven could kind of get aggressive in aggressive decks by...
nerfing their blockers. No. You can only get the attack at the end. You just win the race.
Yeah, you could, like, trade back and forth, because the thing about Mazavith is it untaps their guy and lets them block. With Corehaven, their guy is still tapped.
Yeah. Like, Corehaven, to me...
And this, I would say this is one of the top three lands that Ak would cut right now.
It is. You know, people compare it to Mazavith a lot in, like, the defensive decks, but it's... Even though it taps for mana, it's so much worse. Because it's... You have to pay so much to do it. Like, part of the problem I have with Corehaven is just, like, there are so many times and turns where it's like, well, I can Corehaven their guy, or I can play a spell. And, like, having to make that choice is, like, never... I'm never, like, stoked on it.
But that doesn't make... I mean, that doesn't make a card like Kel'Jordan Outpost better.
No, it doesn't. I'm saying, like, we changed Outpost for Corehaven because of the way it functioned in practice. But now that we have played for an extended period of time with Corehaven, I am much more... I am very unimpressed with it, and I thought it would be better than it actually plays. If that makes any sense.
I don't know if I would be as negative about it, although I will say it's probably close to being on my chopping block as well, just because if we could find more ways to do things that were interactive in Cube and kind of, like, push the issue a little bit more, as opposed to Corehaven, which, it's just, it's like, it, because it takes three of your lands to do the Maze of Aether effect, it kind of gums up a bunch of resources, like you were saying.
Yeah.
I still like it, because it does something different. I do like it because you can win races with it. I do like it because you can get guys who are coming in at you and block them and kill them. It does other stuff. We'll see. Time will tell on that one. I can't imagine swapping Corehaven for Outpost. I could imagine swapping Corehaven for something else.
Like, especially at this point, the specialty lands are not balanced, color-wise at all.
They're close. For a long time, they were 100% balanced. It was you couldn't do one or the other. But again, Innistrad kind of changed that whole thing with the two-color combinations.
But so, right now, there are three specialty lands that are white. Caracas, Corehaven, and Windrush Kites. And I think that we could cut Corehaven and play a different colored special land, like, for example, Cradle. Yeah. And it would be fine. Like,
that's very reasonable. Or Phyrexian Tower.
Or Phyrexian Tower.
Because we're trying to help black out.
Or whatever. Like, try something different. Like Corehaven, it's the third best white specialty land in Cube right now, which is not a place you really want to be.
Agreed. That does kind of segue us into some of the chat here. We'll just kind of go in order. Hellion Crucible, no downside. I like that card.
Hellion Crucible is sweet. It's kind of slow, but...
Well, no, it's not about that it's slow. It's about the fact that red decks want to be able to do other things with their lands when they're not dealing damage, or if you get flooded, or you just want to have options. If it made a 3-3, I don't think it would be in the cube. But the fact that it goes to 4-4...
it goes real big. And the fact that the token has haste.
Yeah, like, I feel like you earned haste, really. I think if this card, if it wasn't a 4-4, and or it didn't have haste, it wouldn't be in the cube.
No.
Because if I had to work all this time and energy to put a 4-4 to play and I couldn't attack with it immediately. I mean, again, with the land, like, you do an EOT on their turn, mm-hmm. et cetera. It makes sense that it has haste.
It's just always, like...
I wish there were more...
It's going to help you out more often than it's going to, fuck up your ability to play with Firewalker on turn two.
Agreed. I wish there were more lands like this for red and black. This is just what they need in this kind of slot. Hellion Crucible gets my thumb up. Yes, it's slower. You know, yes, it takes your, how much mana are you investing, those kind of things. But it's not about that. It's about, when you aren't doing other things, using your resources positively when you're not doing anything else.
Yeah.
Moving down the list here, Sam's interested to know on a series of cards. We'll start with Caracas because we were just talking about Caracas. Caracas has been the butt of a lot of comments, as people will say it's just, it's just Plains Plus. It's just,
That's certainly true.
Slight upside Plains?
Significant upside planes. What is it?
It's just planes. No, it's like maybe I'm using the wrong inflection. It's just planes, Zach. It's just planes. Why would you have planes in the cube?
I see. I mean,
no one's gonna draft. The argument people have is no one's gonna draft it high. They're just gonna look at it as it goes around the table and be like, "Oh, am I playing white? Oh, is there no other better card for me to take here? Oh, I guess I'll just take this kind of planes plus card."
It occasionally is awesome when you get to abuse it. I mean, Live the Dream with Mangara, Vendilion Click, Venser, that kind of stuff.
Again, you stop all over my words, because that's the argument. The argument isn't it's Planes Plus. For us, we've gone the step further and tried to apply cards.
It's an enabler.
Exactly.
But also, it's... The thing is it's awesome in that deck, but it's also sweet against a lot of other decks that have random legends. Like, there are just cards that are legends... that you just get to hose for free, which is sweet. Like, Bouncing Rifelos, random, reanimated guys, has anyone ever taken it higher than on the wheel? Not in pack one, but certainly in packs two and three, depending on
I've taken
on
it higher than the wheel in pack one, but that's because I'm just
you're obsessed with that deck.
I have a plan.
Yeah.
That plan may or may not involve Mangara, but it definitely involves Venser, Vendilion Click.
Yeah, I mean, but I think...
The other thing I really like about Caracas, Venser, Vendilion Clicks aside, it's not good enough. Well, it does other things. I mean, my argument here is, there's all this talk about, are decks like the Reanimator decks too good? Is the turn two Gristlebrand just game over? Caracas is another way to kind of keep those things in check. And if Cube is kind of a mirror of Magic's history in the way formats play out, well, this is a real thing that happens in Legacy right now. People will play these decks and put these big legends into play, and other decks will just kind of have Caracas. So to me, it's another kind of balancing effect that works its way out.
So another one is Teetering Peaks. We're not running Teetering Peaks.
Talk about a card that is always a 15th pick.
Yeah. The problem we have with Teetering Peaks is that no one liked it. It ended up being, like, decent to mediocre in most of the decks that, like, you can kind of end up with it in. But, like, for the most part, like, red doesn't want a land that comes into play tapped, even for that +2/+0. Like, the mana is worth more than the 2 damage you get. And sometimes you don't even get the 2 damage.
That's the thing, is it's not a guarantee 2 to the face. And...
like, if it was just shock on a land?
Not shock. What's 2 to a player?
2/3 of a lava spike?
Yeah, 2/3 of a lava spike on a land. If Teetering Peaks was, enters a battlefield, do 2 damage to target player?
That would probably be in.
Yeah, that would be in. Alright, that's not good enough of an example. If you have a creature in play... there are other caveats to this. But yes, too often, Teetering Peaks reads like, your guy now has Provoke. Or...
it should be, like, both the come-into-play lands from Zendikar block. Like, it should be +2/+0 and target creature can't block this turn.
Then yeah, that would be gross.
That would be gross. It would be in cube for sure.
What is it? Smoldering Spires.
Yeah, Smoldering Spires. Yeah. Smoldering
and there are cubes... I think...
Teetering Spires?
I think the MTGO cube actually ran Smoldering Spires for a while.
I mean...
but don't quote me on that, but I definitely remember seeing that card.
Yeah. Like, if it was Teetering Spires?
Yeah.
If
we just jam those two cards together at high speed, that would be a card.
Yeah.
Oh, but
yeah.
The fact that it's not a guarantee... the fact that it gives your guy Provoke a lot of times, or you just cringe when you don't have a guy, or you got an untapped red... like, too many of these things happened.
You just shoot yourself in the foot with a lot.
I mean, it's so bad to the point where if I ever got hit by on the MTGO cube, I would, like, stop and make a point of it. Like, oh my, I got hit by a Teetering Peaks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm probably going to win the rest of this match, but that happened.
What's... okay, so...
moving on from Teetering Peaks, we have Barbarian Ring. Now, Sam's argument, or kind of poses the question, is like, well, why would you include a land in your cube if someone was not going to take it until the wheel? Like, why would you have a card like Barbarian Ring in your cube if 8 people are going to look at it, not take it, and then eventually when cards come back, consider taking it? And I think it's just, this card is about reach for red. It's about giving it a little extra when it's a color that, you know, needs help in that regard. And it's another Life from the Loam enabler, which I'm a fan of.
I mean, one of the reasons I like it is that, you know, having stuff to do with your lands in red is sweet. Like, you know, Fire Blast, you know, even potentially Shard Volley, which isn't in right now, but certainly could potentially be in.
Ugh. Hope not.
I mean, like, Barbarian Ring, like, yes, it's kind of like Mountain Plus, but, like, the damage to you is relevant, or it can be, at least. And, like, just being able to shoot with it is good, and...
I mean, like 2 weeks ago, I took this card... before the wheel, when I was drafting, I had Seismic Assault, Stormbind, and Life of the Loam, and I had a Barbering, and I definitely used it, like, returned it from Life of the Loam, used it again.
It doesn't just go into, like, aggressive red decks. Like, there are other kind of homes for it. Which
all
I think
those sweet is it decks.
Sometimes you need to do a guy. Alright, what's next?
Ultimately, I think a Barbarian Ring is an easy one to defend. I understand what Sam's getting at with the whole, like, you know, it's difficult to have lands that 8 people can all look at them and be like, oh, why would I bother?
Yeah.
You know, why would I take this?
That's
and,
true.
And to me, it's about coming up with reasons to want to do that and putting cards into your cube that will make players actively search out Barbarian Ring, Caracas. Those were the ones we talked about. So there was also, is Thawing Glaciers too slow? Thawing Glaciers is too slow.
Thawing Glaciers was in for a long time, though. It was...
It glacially moved its way out of cube.
It was a slow...
sleddy decline.
Yeah, it slowly melted its way
right out of cube. It turned in from this beautiful, you know, lovely artwork here by Jeff... was it?
The Ice Cap Melted.
Yeah. We had assigned one of those in the cube for literal years. It turned into a... It slowly melted into a Judge Foil... and then went right into a binder, never see the light of the day ever again.
It was one of those things where, in old, old, old cube lists, which were very much like, who's giant haymakers that cost 8 mana?
Yeah, the old five-color dragons days, when five-color dragons were battling it out head-to-head all the time, like, the guy with Thawing Glaciers had a huge advantage.
Right, because, like, the decks were so, like, very ponderously slow, very, like, awkward, like, nobody no one blinks until turn 5, like... Thawing Glaciers is a sweet source of, like, just fixing and card advantage that, like, is just far too slow to be a thing anymore.
Yep.
Like, especially, like, the way red and black are set up now. If you were to play Thawing Glaciers against them...
If I was the aggressive red mage or the aggressive black mage, my opponent goes Thawing Glaciers.
You're just licking your chops.
I'm like, GG, son.
Yeah, like...
I'm gonna wait till that's in play tap before I him you or mind twist you.
Yeah, like, you're just gonna destroy them. Like, it's...
Blink Moth Nexus has never been in the cube. Nor has Ink Moth Nexus. Although, when we put in Kessig Wolf Run, briefly there was jokes of adding Ink Moth Nexus and Primeval Titan. But it's...
Combo!
I mean... It's fine. Blink Moth Nexus. Yeah, you want your lands to, like, deal damage and attack, and Blink Moth Nexus needs to either have equipment or some other action kind of going on.
Like, the fact that it's a 1-1 as opposed to... Like, flying does not save it from being a 1-1.
Right. Lands enter the red zone under very specific circumstances. You'll know when they are. That's like, yeah, that one's easy.
I mean, like, the colorless main lands are Workshop, or Factory, excuse me. Mishra's Factory and Mutavault.
Yeah, they're both 2/2s. They're both activate for one.
You're only ever swinging with your lands if, like, the coast is totally clear.
Or you're just, like, all-out assaulting.
Yeah. And it's just, swinging for one, like, the fact that, like, it flies and, like, you can occasionally, like, hit it up with swords or whatever. Like,
I mean, that's good.
It's certainly good, but like...
That's not in the top 90 lands in all of Magic that we'll need to power a cube. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum, though. Let's talk about Urza's Factory.
Urza's Factory?
That's correct. That is a card that I have always kind of had on the outside looking in. Waiting and wondering.
This, again, strikes me as would have been sweet 3-4 years ago.
And we didn't even play it back then. I just didn't think there was enough room.
Because it wasn't a dragon. And I didn't tap for dragon mana. Like, that was, like, largely the argument. Like, why would I spend 7 mana to, like, make a 2/2 when I...
Teachings was a draftable deck in Cube 5 years ago.
Yeah, like...
And this card was in Teachings.
Like, Factory is okay, but again, it's so slow.
Yeah. I mean, since we're just apparently talking about cards that are glacially slow...
Like, if you even ever activate Factory, aren't you already winning that game, like, by a mile?
You just can't race with Teferi for 3.
It's just...
These are things that have happened, Deck.
I know.
Don't act surprised.
When you play Cube long enough, though, like, eventually, like, everything happens. Like...
There's still some things we haven't done yet.
We're running out of those.
True. But there, you know...
Yeah.
Let's go back to the list side.
Sure.
Let's see what other stuff... Ooh, there's a good one to talk about. Let's talk about Dryad Arbor.
Ah, yes.
Dryad...
Arbor.
For a long time, I hated this card.
I like it.
Are you gonna take the 4 on this one?
I'll take the 4. I suggested this.
Oh, whenever I think about this card, I think about the months of my life where Zach would not shut up about it and just desperately wanted to go in the cube. And I kept being like, why would we include Forest in the draft? Why are we putting Forest in the draft? He kinda got to me eventually. I feel like what really sold me was... I'm trying to go back to large camera, small scene over there.
Okay, calm down.
Calmer than you are, dude.
Anyway. Like...
Let's switch it back to Future
Sight. So, I like Dryad Arbor. I think that it's one of those cards that it doesn't get played a ton. Like, it's certainly not...
Ah, yes. A good place to start. Doesn't get played a ton.
But it's good... Like, when it's good, it's great. And it's constantly a surprise for people. Like, you crack Fetchland to block. Like, you're blowing people's combat math out of the water.
What the hell are you blocking?
Whatever.
So you're just trying to not die?
Like, if you're in a
race...
You've
turned Fetchland into gain 5 life?
Yeah.
All right.
That messes with people's combat math.
All right.
Or, like, they kill all your guys, and you're like, Fetchland for this, for my Dryad Arbor, like, put some equipment on it, get there.
I mean, at the end of the day, what really sold me on it was Green Sun's anything for 0... And people getting edicted and being able to, like, Misty Rainforest into a Dryad Arbor. I thought that was pretty cool.
Like, it's not the most impactful card, but it catches a lot of people off guard in situations that they are not used to being caught off guard.
I don't know. I think Dryad Arbor is living on borrowed time in the queue as far as I'm concerned. Now, we might be adding 5 new fetch lands. So this guy might be popping up 5 more times as often than he was or she was or whatever the tree's gender is, whatever. We could be being dryaded a lot. I mean, in my experience playing with it in Cube, I think I have attacked for 5 total with Dryad Arbor. Three points of damage in one game. That was a big milestone. And that's pretty much all I've done with it.
Again, I'm not saying that, like, every deck is slamming Dryad Arbor and is stoked about it. What I'm saying is that it fits a good niche in a lot of decks and catches opponents off guard a lot.
The niche of blocking?
Or attacking. Like, it messes with combat math like few other things do.
How like a 1-1 attacking rarely messes with combat math.
It's more relevant if you have equipment or pump spells, sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are green pump spells in the cube, yes.
And, like, Green Sun Zenith thing is obviously very good. Yes. You know.
On turn 1, not so great on turn 9.
Yeah, but, you know, there are plenty of cool ways to...
I choose you, Forest.
There are plenty of cool ways to make Dryad Arbor fun.
Colony Garden does not attack for 1.
Yeah, Colony Garden unfortunately does nothing.
Colony Garden also does not surprise become edicted.
Yeah. Like, if Colony Garden was a forest, then maybe.
Yeah, if Colony Garden was a forest, then maybe. A forest that entered the battlefield tapped, yeah, yeah.
Like, if that whole cycle were the basic land types, I think they would...
Wouldn't that be really effing good?
I think they would all be in. Track Skeletic Turn, get Teetering Peaks? Woo, mama!
Don't you mean Brainstorm, crack fetch land, play Halimar Depths?
Like, that would also be insane? Yeah, those would be very, very
good. You are high.
Pajuga Bog? Oh!
Let's go, switch it to the list over here.
Okay.
Let's just see what else is on that. You don't need to change that. We're going to come back.
What else we got?
Going down the list of things that may or may not be elementary, my dear Watson.
Nephalia Dronyard, I feel like, is a non-standard.
I think that Ben Stark has kind of really done all the work that we need to do to prove that card is good. I mean, it's only even better in a 40-card format than in a 60-card format. Yeah, I mean, I really like that card in Cube. I think before this most recent Standard Pro Tour where everyone and their mom got to see how good it was, I had really been kicking around the idea of putting it in when I was trying to kind of find other ways to help out Reanimator. Because to me it's like, oh, blue and black, well, those are the classic Reanimator colors. Players can just kind of do this on themselves, find their fatties, find their own burial rights, and make it happen.
I think it's also relevant as a control win condition.
Yeah, no, that's what it's really
kind and I think that,
ended
like,
up being.
People are very, strangely defensive of milling in Cube. Like, I feel like I see a lot of Cube lists that have, like, a lot of dedicated milling cards, especially in blue-black.
Really?
Like, stuff like Nemesis of Reason. Like, especially the bigger mill.
That's not a dedicated...
But
When I think dedicated, I think Mind Funeral, Mind Grind, Grimsley Unthinkable.
I've seen a number of lists that have that kind of stuff in them.
Huh.
And I think that, like, people... You know, especially because, you know, Cube is what you want it to be.
Yeah, I mean...
People like milling a lot. There are a number of people who like milling and want to support it.
I'd love to play more Magic with those people, because most of the people that we cube with are not very excited.
Well, I think that it's important... Like, it's important to have milling cards that are either, like, good on their own and the milling is incidental, in the case of... Or, like, they're just so, like increasing confusion... Where it's just like, it's not actually you have to play that game
just
milling strategy,
fireball.
You just fireball.
It's just blue deck. Fireball.
Yeah.
Be real.
It's very good. That card is insane.
Blue fireball, good.
Yeah.
Switch back to that spreadsheet. Let's see what else we got.
Okay.
Slayer Stronghold. I feel like we've touched on Slayer Stronghold a couple of times while we were talking about draft archetypes. I feel like other things in general, virtual card advantage. Slayer Stronghold is a house.
That card is really good.
I think this card is very much underloved. I can't say enough about it. The fact that it gives your guy vigilance. I think if it did, like, 2 of these 3 things... Well, the haste is really important.
If it only did 2 of these things, I don't think it'd be in. Like, 2 on haste is okay.
Let me rephrase that. The vigilance is free.
Sure.
If it gave your guy +2/+0 and haste, this card would be in the cube and it would be good.
Maybe.
Oh my gosh. You can't really play Anger in Cube.
The Vigilance is so nice, though. Like, I don't know if I would call it free.
I think it's free.
Like, I think that if it was just 2 on haste...
You think this land would have cost red to activate if it didn't... If
or
it
like 1 and a red.
Oh god, it would be so good!
It's already very good. Like, I don't know. What else we got?
I think I'm not gonna say criminally underrated, but I think Slayer Stronghold is underrated for people.
Oh, Urborg?
Urborg is another one of those cards that it might be on borrowed time in the cube. I don't know. I feel obligated. That's
this
not,
Urborg?
What does that one do again? Target creature loses fear or swamp walk?
Yeah.
First strike. Fear is not a thing.
Yeah. Strict upside on swamp, though, right? It's like a rocket.
Except that guy never cubed before, cubed with us today. He didn't think it tapped for mana.
Oh.
He was just like, Urborg. Okay, cool. I'm like, oh, whatever. Well,
I think Urborg is
good. I don't know.
I think it's fine.
I don't know.
Black is definitely the color that most wants all of its lands to tap for black. Like Necro, all the double black, like two drops, you know, of which there are many.
Yeah, but just having like a one-off land, like, again, if this card was a swamp in your deck and you could fetch land for it.
Sure, that'd be very, very good.
Yeah, I don't think it would be like outside of the realm of possible and better. I mean, I guess like back in the day you could Teleria West for it, and that's what made it good, and we don't have Teleria West. Well, another land we could talk about. I think there's a lot of lands that we could talk about here.
Teleria West?
Yeah.
There was a cube for
a short time.
Oh, we can play original Teleria. Loses banding, but you can only activate it during the upkeep step.
Oh my god, are you kidding?
No.
During upkeep, so any upkeep at least. During upkeep, remove the banding or bans with other ability.
Yeah,
that's I knew it was bad, I didn't realize it was that bad.
Art's kind of good though. So, meanwhile.
It gets Engineer Explosives. It gets
Ancestral Visions.
Ancestral Visions.
I think that
sometimes it gets Black Lotus.
Like, right now, I think that if Teleria West comes in, there's a argument for putting Slaughter Pact back in, which is currently out.
Oh, yeah, that's an argument for putting it. But I don't think Teleria West is close to coming back.
No. I think that, like, it certainly has its...
I think back in the day, in Five Color Dragons, it was in the cube, and the argument was like, oh, well, you can blue-blue one and go get Forest.
Yeah.
And then you have now you've got green. Now you can cast Vorosh the Hunter.
Right. Oh, that guy. I mean, these
were things that used to happen
all the time. I think that Teleria West is certainly fine. I think that it's very easy to, especially, make slight changes to your overall cube to make Teleria West very good. I just think that, like,
very,
I don't know,
very good.
I mean,
your cube has to be slower for Teleria West to be really
sure,
good.
And you just have to have more targets for it. Like, the more non-land targets you have that are relevant, the better. Engineer Explosives,
yeah.
Everflow Chalice, Slaughter Pact, Ancestral Visions, etc., etc. Like, the more of those you have, the better Teleria West becomes, and you can very easily make Teleria West good by adding all of them. And, like, not necessarily drag down your whole cube list too terribly much.
No, in a world with a larger cube, Teleria West would be in our cube. It's not like it's never going to get there. It's just not today.
Yeah.
Back to the spreadsheet.
What else we got?
We're getting near the bottom here.
Oh, Tech Edge. Let's talk Tech Edge.
Let us talk Tech Edge. A lot of these cards we're kind of bringing up now are things that feel like they just got added with the boost from 80 lands to 90 lands in the cube. It feels like it's given us a lot more freedom to kind of play with stuff that we just kind of deemed not worthy in years past. Tech Edge, for me, is definitely one of those cards where it's like, well, it's not Wasteland, it's not Stripmine. It's so slow. It's so slow. Why would I want to play it? It's so slow.
Yeah, my original... I think I was one of the people who argued for including this card to try it out. And my argument around it was that it's not... You're right. It's not Stripmine and it's not Wasteland. But there are so many very powerful lands in cube that having the ability to deal with them as need be is very relevant. Like, having a deck that can kill Maze of Ith that doesn't have to play Avalanche Riders and Stone Rain and Molten Rain and Ravenous Baboons. You know, being able to get their library, being able to, you know, not necessarily for the sake of, like, trying to cut them off colors or trying to cut them off their mana, but, like, to get rid of their powerful, spell lands, so to speak. Get their Drown Yard. get their, you know, celestial colonnade or something.
No, you know, what you're bringing up now is pretty much what went into the ultimate decision to add it, which was, you know, we played a lot worth cube with the land destruction package, just kind of having cards like Stone Rain in your deck.
Yeah.
And you could play, you know, a big red deck that just happens to have, like, a Stone Rain, you know, maybe a Aftershock or something in it that may hit a land. But that Stone Rain might still be really good if your opponent is playing three colors, or if they have those other specialty lands in their deck.
Right.
And that was ultimately, at the end of the day, what brought Tech Edge into the cube. And I'm going to try to stand by it for now. It hasn't been spectacular, but at the same time, it hasn't been really bad. I think that, you know, for every time Nephalia Drownryard wins a game, Tectonic Edge destroys a land in a relevant way, whether it be that land or not.
I've been pretty down on it, to be honest, since it's been in.
When you say down on it, does that mean you're like
negative?
You're down on it. You're not getting down on it.
So
this was like one of your babies,
right? And I felt like, you know, I think this is an example of like theory versus practice, where I thought this card would play one way or work at a certain level, and then we put it in the cube and it didn't, or it hasn't, and like, I kind of see it as like, oh, well, that was a kind of a bust. It was a failed experiment.
I don't think it's as bad as you make it out to be. I definitely think it's one of the probably bottom five exciting non-basics in the cube.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a better role player than when I first looked at it for inclusion this time around, thought for it.
So Dust Bowl versus Tech Edge?
Dust Bowl versus Tech Edge. This is actually a conversation we had a lot with Lewis over the holidays, because we were talking...
Dust Bowl used to be in a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. Again, we had a lot of lands in the cube back in the day that required infinite turns and mana to activate, and Dust Bowl was one of them, and it was good back then. And kind of what ultimately led to the decision to have Tech Edge over Dust Bowl was, for what we just kind of mentioned, I mean, you want that one shot against that Drownyard, against that library, against that specialty land you need to get them off of their third splash color, hit their Orzhov Basilica on their blue-white deck. You know, touching for Dromar's Charm, et cetera, as where Dust Bowl is so slow. And
it's like you're never activating it any before you're activating Tech Edge.
Right, and the turn you are activating at the same turn you're activating Tech Edge, because it would be good, you're doing stone nothing else. You don't have the opportunity
right.
to activate an ability to play a spell.
And like, even if you're like, oh sweet, now I get to throw all my lands and blow up all their lands, like, woohoo.
You have to have a ton of mana in play all the time to activate Dust Bowl, and you have to have useless lands you don't want. There aren't a lot of games that you're, like, now winning that you were like, oh man, I was flooded and I was going to lose horribly if there was a Tech Edge in my deck. But now, with Dust Bowl,
I crawled back in it. Like,
I mean, yeah, maybe we give a little bit more credence back to the five-color control decks by not including Dust Bowl in cube, but it's perfectly worth it. I don't think that the five-color control decks are the powerhouse that they were in cube so long ago that we need card to keep them in check.
There's already an FLD that's much better than this, that's keeping those decks down. Like, keeping them in check.
And, you know, could be just an R-cube kind of scenario, where we could kind of touch on... I think the argument holds true if it's Dust Bowl or Tech Edge in a vacuum in a cube that's not ours.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You are correct. 5cc is fun, and Dust Bowl is miserable to play with.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, gentlemen, and other words, we're just coming in at 90 minutes tonight, and I think that's going to have to do us for lands. I feel like we're going to cut it a little bit short, but we can probably touch on it again next week. We'll spend some time thinking about things we played with in the past. I'll remember to bring the binder by to see exactly what's sitting in there right now of things
that'd be fun.
We've played with in the past.
Just do like a whole month-long series of episodes about things not in cube right now. Go through the whole binder.
I think, I mean, we'll kind of get to do that just by talking about every
color.
Maybe kind
of like looking at baby pictures or something. Like, oh, remember when this was in cube?
Yeah,
aww.
Yeah. Or just like finding, I recently traded off the Lake of the Dead that was in that binder because it was signed. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember the event I got that signed. I was like, oh my god, that was so many years ago.
Yeah.
And just sat there and sat there and sat there. So yeah, you know, we'll take a look. Because, you know, again, over the years, to me, we could talk about lands that produce five colors of mana, because I think those were much more important back in the day than they are now. The conversation that led to Vivid Grove, leaving the cube, leaving the other Vivids, those kind of conversations. You know, again, when you're building your cube, when you're constructing it, when you're making decisions about it, lands is probably the hardest section to deal with, just because there are so many sweet ones out there that you want to play in all these decks, and they're enablers for so many great things. This is someone that showed up a little bit late to the party. Yes, Lake of the Dead either does nothing, or maybe once in a while does create a lot of black mana. Mm-hmm. But there you have it for this week's edition of The Magic Box, talking about lands. We'll probably be back next week talking about artifacts or gold cards or something, unless some news comes up or Eck manages to buy some speakers, and then we'll bring Sam on. The problem with Sam that I didn't really realize is he's down to no car.
Down to no car?
Yeah, so he is a party bus without an actual bus.
So he's just a party.
I mean, there are worse things to be.
Certainly true.
Because I don't think we could just, like, bus him into the studio, also known as Eck's bedroom.
You could drive.
I'm so over driving 120 miles a day.
Oh, whatever.
I mean, I could drive. What I could do is I could just drive him down here and then just leave him here.
You certainly could do that.
Just leave him Boland style. He could just crash with Boland.
Yeah, fine.
We'll work those things out. One of these days we'll have that on here, because we'd love to go back through all of the Mox drafts and the Mox picks and all that stuff. Not just Sam's, but everyone else's. I believe Lewis, our friend, who was on the show a few weeks ago, was going to mock up those spreadsheets for us. We'll look at some lands. We'll come back next week with either another section of the cube to talk about what we like, what we don't like, and why, or some other topic. Now, for all of the rigmarole that you've all stopped listening for, you can find all of his information every week at akamon.blogspot.com. It's got the current cube list, the skeleton cube list. It has the cube league info, as well as proposed rules and structures for it, should you ever choose to start something that for yourself. We also have some great cube picks up there, because people were looking for what the box looked like, so check that out, ekamon.blogspot.com. You can find us every week right around 9:30, 10 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time here on Twitch TV at Ekamon, as well as on the internets at Tristan Gregson on Twitter, and
the one non-standard is at Young Mecha.
At Young Mecha.
Because at Ekamon Twitter was already taken by an Armenian 19-year-old.
Have you talked to this person?
No, I was like, who took my name? And I looked, and it's like, huh, I can't read any of that.
Yeah, if you ever play any video game ever and you run into an Ek or an Ekamon character, that would be this guy. It's mostly
very Ek. Likely.
Yes. So we have those things. You can find us slowly but surely creeping away onto MTGCast. Thank those guys for hosting us there as well. We're also fairly active on Salvation and Reddit these days for that kind of things. And as MTGO Cube Drafts slowly come back to us, we have added the sponsor button, ladies and gentlemen. We are not above it. We are looking for your help, because these things are not free. The bandwidth we take up is not free. X time is not free. So if you like what you see,
it's pretty free.
And that is a joke. We use that often. if you're looking for apparently X thing, and I can't believe you keep saying this out loud, is when MTGO Cube Drafts do come back, you're going to be what?
I'm going to be streaming Cube Drafts nonstop.
Yeah, you heard it here first. That
I will stop to eat, sleep, and smoke, and that's about it.
Bathe was not included in that list.
I'll do that between rounds.
I will be Skyping in for a while.
Yeah, there you go.
There you have it. Please, you know, hit the donate button, help us out. We're going to try to expand and bring you new content, more content. That being said, I cannot wait for our damn logo and all of our sweet new branding to come out. We have a spectacular person working on that stuff that I, again, cannot divulge because he's stuck at effing GDC this week working on stuff.
Dropping hints.
I am. I might be doing that on purpose, I might not, I don't really know. Either way, thanks guys for tuning in, and we will see you next week.